Listen to the Carbcast on iTunes and subscribe through the podcast app on your iPhone or iPad. For Android users, find us on the Stitcher Radio app. Go to Google Play and download Stitcher Radio for podcasts. Add us to your playlist and click listen to hear us anytime you like. Don't forget to enable offline listening if you wish to save your data on the bank. We're also available on the SoundCloud app under The Carbcast, or check our website at www.thecarbcast.com. Remember, listening through an app will recall where you were up to when you get that screamer, or you could always make a whip. The fish, of course. To the Carbcast, introducing the two biggest nods that don't use chops. They're old, grumpy, and they're pretty opinionated. Here's your hosts, it's Mark and Jamie. Ooh,
yeah. We finally made it. We are 50, half century. How's it going, Mark? How's it feel to be half a century old?
It feels like we've actually achieved something. The only thing else I've achieved in life was a 50-metre swimming certificate. So I think this is quite something. We should give ourselves a pat on the back.
I remember when we started this show, it was only like once every 2 or 3 weeks, wasn't it, at the start? And I remember when we started, we were on like episode 3 or something, and one of the poker podcasts that I listened to had just hit its episode 100. I remember thinking, blimey, like if we ever hit 100, it's probably in like 3 years' time, and will we still be doing this in 3 years' time? And here we are. Well, it's just over a year, and we're at episode 50. You know, they're going out every week, bar the odd one where we're busy or whatever. Yeah, 50. I do feel slightly proud, all warm inside.
Yeah, I think we've earned it. It's I'm not going to embellish it and say it's like really hard work. It is time consuming, and you know, when people forget to switch the phones off.
It's my girlfriend. She's in America. I'm going to have to answer it because she's tried about 4 times today. One sec. Apologies for that. She's in the States, and we're very limited to when we can get in touch with each other, but she's not connecting today. When I spoke to Kevin Nash earlier for the new feature, Kevin said he was laughing at last week's show when I went into one, saying that you know, we there won't be a show every week because we have to concentrate on earning a living. It quite amused him. Talking of Kevin Nash, we've been pestered on our page to find out who is the winner of the Kevin Nash competition. So we have chosen a winner, and I'm just going to have a look now to see who two or three people mentioned this particular answer. The answer is the Nash debate. I quite like the Nash debate. So we've got a job here to look through, find out who the first person was to say the Nash debate. It was quite early on in the thread. So obviously we had two posts going where people could post up. I know a few people sent private messages as well. We had over sort of 90 comments on each one. The Nash debate, there were two entries for the Nash debate. Well, there were a number of people mentioned it afterwards. On the 17th of May, I found on the normal Carbcast page, it was a guy called Neil Stanley, was it, Mark?
Yeah, that's Neil Stanley. How was it?
At 1 minute to 10. And then when we searched the official Carbcast fan page, at 5:42 p.m., which is 4 hours earlier, 3 hours earlier, 4 hours earlier, Ed Pearson also had Nash debates, and he beat Neil, unfortunately, by 4 hours. Unfortunately for Neil, sorry, we slow rolled you there, but you don't win. Maybe we can send, because Neil isn't a member of the official Carpcast fan page, which means he can't have seen it on the fan page and then just copied it 4 hours later onto the other post. So how about we send Neil some clothing, Mark?
Yeah, no worries. I'll be in contact with Neil, and are you going to contact Ed and pass his address on to Castle Nash?
Yes, and Ed will win the Slapheads for coming up with the title, and we hope you enjoyed the jingle that we had made for the feature. I had a great chat with Kevin earlier, and he will be on the show a little bit later on. Have you been? You did your first session on the new Syndicate, didn't you?
I did. I popped down there, got a couple of nights in. Didn't catch any car, but saw a couple in the margins of gin clear water. Photographed a 34-pounder for a kid called Martin Lowe, who, incidentally, I photographed his first 30 from St Ishella Lagoon many years back, which was also 34-pound.
Wow, small world. So,
yeah, it's good to catch up with an old friend and see a carp on the bank, and it's a very intriguing little place. You know, some lovely gin clear margins, and I'm really, really looking forward to getting stuck into some of the fish, and it's totally different from Icom. It couldn't be any more different. But yeah, what I do like about the place, it's very very natural, very overgrown.
Yeah.
Not too overgrown so you can't get round it, but I've got plenty of nettle stings and a few horsefly bites on my legs because I'm from Yorkshire, and if I'm travelling anywhere south, I've got to wear shorts. you'll hear later on, but we're going to be doing a little competition based on that.
Yeah. Stay tuned. I mentioned this in the chats with Kev, but I'm off to France, off to Luke Moffitt's Scrabbiers in Dijon. I'm off tonight. We're recording this just as I'm middle loading my van up, and then I'm heading off to the south of France, 6 a.m. tomorrow morning, which will be Friday morning. You'll probably hear this Sunday or Monday. I would have thought I'm going to get on the lake and then edit this podcast up, and hopefully I can get enough internet signal to be able to upload it. I will do a trip report while I'm now doing an in-session feature on the lake, and who knows, I mean, there's two very large carp in that lake, very large. Planned some pretty good stuff as well for my next trip. I told you last week that I'm off to Lake Bled literally a week after we get back from France. It's turned into quite an epic journey now. We're going to two festivals, one in Amsterdam, one in Croatia, and Lake Bled in between. So we're basically going England to Amsterdam to Austria to Slovenia to Croatia, back to Amsterdam for a few days, and a bit of carp fishing in the red light district, I think. Sounds like fun. So, 3,000 miles in a bit of an epic journey. I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, I'm interested in these festivals. Are these like some like beep, beep, beep music that you're into festivals or proper rock festivals?
None of them are rock. There's actually, while we're on Bled, there is the Slovenian Music Festival on the side, which is mainly classical and jazz with a load of workshops and a little bit of pop and rock, it says. But it's mainly jazz and classical. The festival in Croatia is called Sunsebi, which is like a soulful house music festival. So no bleeps, just lots of vocally soulful urban-y house music. And the festival in Amsterdam is a drum and bass festival, which is again not blippy, but probably closer to rock than anything else is. It's quite fast and aggressive. And then we're home for 2 days. We go to Camp Bestival, in which is on the south coast in England, which is everything. Fatboy Slim's like headlining, but there's a lot of 80s bands on there. It's a bit of an 80s around? Themed. I was an 80s, well, I was born in the 70s, but my teenage years were the 80s, so I'm looking forward to that. It's very eclectic, the Camp Best for one. It's a family festival, 3 or 4 days. So I've basically got 4 weeks of holiday starting tonight, which is good.
Yeah, well, it comes to festivals. I hope you get better weather than they did at Download this year.
I saw the pictures of that. Yeah, the tents underwater. Yeah, I mean, to be fair, if you camp in a dip, I mean, you wouldn't find an you wouldn't find an angler at the bottom of there, would they? An angler would have checked the weather before he's gone and found some high ground. Like, there's so many like normal folks that don't have any reason to check the weather other than they go, oh yeah, it's raining, or it's not raining, oh it's raining, I'll take me wellies. Not, I'm going to set up at the lowest point of a field that's like, you know, got an incline of about 200 feet. I'll just set up in the base of it. But yeah, I can't ever imagine an angler doing that. You know, if I know there's heavy rain coming, I even look in my peg, you know, look for the higher points in the peg as opposed to lower points, because you know that's where the water's going to gather. It's common sense, but I guess something those anglers take for granted.
Yeah, I say a percentage of us, I guess, is a percentage or not, because when one of the things I look for in a swim to put the bivvy is not only I don't want to be bivvied up in anywhere where a puddle's going to gather, I don't want to be watching rabbits either, or squirrels. I want to watch that lake. And you see so many people, they're bivvied up side on, even when there's like, you know, no wind coming out of them. It's like, what are you doing? You want to see if a fish jumps? You want to see it. You don't want to see rabbits banging each other 100 yards away.
Do you remember somebody on pit 2 set up on the slope with their bivvy facing the opposite way, and the fish were nutting in front of him one after the other? He didn't see a single one. Then, man, it was 17 carp in a 35 acre lake. Like, seeing any fish show was a significant help to your session, and the fish were launching in front of him, and I don't think he looked out once.
No, the rabbit watcher.
That's what he was called, as the rabbit watcher. Yes, not advised. Well, unless you want lots of sleep. Unless you want lots of sleep and no fish. Which, you know, some people do, I guess. Right.
Catching this week, though.
Yeah.
I'm going to bore everyone. Because I get back from carping. My wife's there about midday, Tuesday. Wife's not even going out of her pyjamas. So jokingly, I says, well, if you're not getting up, I'm going to go down river for a couple of hours. And to my surprise, she says, well, I'll run us a bath and go on then. That was it. Four chub later, I was back home.
Yeah.
End of chub story. Crack on.
Okay, we'd like to thank DNA Baits for sponsoring the Carpcast. DNABaits.com, fantastic bait company. We talk about bait quite a bit with Kevin Nash in a little bit, so in the interest of balance, you're going to hear a bit about the key later on, because it's fantastic. But also is fantastic is all the DNA Baits stuff, including the brand new Switch, which everybody's raving about. There's the S7, actually saw John Harrop posted a picture up last night of a big catfish he caught from a lake up near me on the S7. I watched Roger catch tons of fish over the winter on the S7. They also do the Nutter S. What's the other one they do? Go on.
No, I'm trying to think myself. Nutter.
And you can get extra discount off all these already great post-free package deals that they do. You can use the code CARPCAST5 at the checkout and you get an extra 5% discount. And there's some fantastic offers on at the minute. They do a Fluoro Pop-Ups post-free package deal. There's the Fluoro Candy Sticks post-free package deal. Fluoro Wafters post-free package deal. They do the Zig Pack, where you get the Fox Zig aligners and all the associated stuff with them. The Sticky Sweet Liquid that everybody raves about. I think we had a DNA Tip of the Week about the Sticky Sweet last week. The week before, actually, it was the one that you did, wasn't it? You can get there's two options for 5 kilo boilie deals. You can get deal one is you get the boilies and a pot of hook bait, so £45. Deal two is you get the 5 kilo boilies, pot of hook baits, and a liter of liquid of your choice. They do the same two deals for the 10 kilos. Get 10 kilo of the boilie of your choice and a pot of hook baits for £80. Or deal two is you get the hook bait, you get the 10 kilo boilies, the hook baits, and a liter of your choice of liquid. They do a 50 kilo deal as well, a freezer bait. You can split it into two different sizes if you want. You get matching cork dust wafters, pot of matching cork dust pop-ups, and a liter of hydro wheat or beta stim, the fantastic liquids that Mark Holmes was talking about in our liquid episodes a few episodes back now. That's £320 for those. They do loads of great liquids. If you do listen to that Mark Holmes episode, you will you will certainly want to go searching through. And there's some great prices there. It's quality gear used by lots of anglers, including who's our DNA tip of the week from this week?
We've got another one from Lee Mother Morris.
Let's check out Lee now.
DNA tip of the week.
Right, so my DNA tip of the week, it actually come about whilst I was fishing at Rainbow not so long ago. Now, I know a lot of people straight away are going to be thinking that's not going to relate to my own fishing, but I actually used this tip or tactic, whatever you want to call it, whilst I was over on Frimley last week and managed to catch myself a few chunks using it. It's basically an indestructible hook bait. And the reasons why I needed that out at Rainbow, you need to put rods out there for days on end. I had one of my rods out for at least 9 days before it had gone. And the pop-up was still intact and doing the job that it should be doing for me. So basically what it is with DNA's cork dust pop-ups, they're obviously a food bait item, so hence why the cork dust is in there. So when you're putting your free offerings out, you've got a pop-up that's exactly the same as your free offering. Now, the problem is with a food bait pop-up is they take on water, so they get heavy, and after a while, they'll end up falling over on you if you're using them on, say, your chods or your hinge stiffies or whatever pop-up rig. So basically, what I did was, it was one of the 18mm cork dust pop-ups, drilled it out with a 6mm drill bit, 3/4 of the way through, and then plugged it with a cork stick. Now, obviously, you've got a very buoyant hook bait there, but what I wanted to do was wrap it in a mesh. Now, using the Evo system that DNA do, it's basically a salt-cured Evo pot, which I've just dropped on my foot. It's basically a salt-cured Evo pot. If you're unfamiliar with it, on the DNA YouTube channel, there's Mark Holmes demonstrating the Evo kit. And it's basically, it's wrapping your hook baits up in a paste. So what I've done is I've drilled out the 18mm corkball pop-up and then wrapped it in a thin layer of paste using the Evo system. And then I've got a pair of lady tights, wrapped the hook bait in the tights, and what the paste does is it oozes out them fine little holes and you can barely see the tights around the hook bait whatsoever. So now you've got yourself an indestructible hook bait, and the reasons why I used it on Frimley is the birds were picking me up constantly. So using a meshed hook bait, the birds can pick it up all day long and it will still be working for you. The other benefit of using the paste around the mesh is that whenever you cast a pop-up rig that's meshed up, there's a chance of the hook actually hooking through the mesh. But with the paste, where it's oozed out of the tights as such, it doesn't allow the hook to actually penetrate through the mesh. So you don't need to use your PVA foam or anything. So yeah, that's my DNA tip of the week. Get out there and try it.
DNA tip of the week.
And we have a new sponsor this week, which is Pinpoint Hooks. Pinpoint Hooks, they're a German firm, and they were very kind to send Mark and I some of their sharpening kits and some of their already sharpened hooks a couple of months ago now, wasn't it? And we did do a review on the hook sharpening, and I really liked it. I really liked the stones that you get with them. I liked the files, the case that it comes in, the LED in the little magnifying glass, yeah, the eyepiece. I thought it was an absolutely great setup, and they have come on board as a sponsor for the next few weeks. You also get a discount with them, don't you, Mark?
Yeah, use the code CARPCAST10 as you're checking out, and you get a 10% discount, which is a very kind of Mark, who is the man behind it all. And I was going to tell you a bit about them, because of the hooks that they sell. They're not, well, this is hard shine sharpened, but they're hand sharpened on a unique one of a kind machine under a microscope. Now, the stuff they sent me and Jamie out, there was some of their own hooks and also some Nash chop twisters and normal twisters that were sharpened up. And, well, I'm sure you'll say the same, Jamie. They were unbelievably sharp.
Yeah, and they're actually done on a machine, aren't they? They're not hand sharpened. Oh, they are sharpened by hand on a unique machine.
Yeah, well, I'm assuming you're holding it, but, you know, you've got a machine spinning or doing whatever it does, and you're holding the hook to it. But, yeah, it's a new standard in hook sharpness anyway. And, well, see, I don't think there are any tucks that available that come close.
No, you need to check out the website, which is www.pinpoint-hooks.co.uk, and their original German website is www.pinpoint-hooks.de, I assume for Deutschland, which is the German word for Germany. They sell ready sharpened hooks. They sell all the kits that Mark and I have got, which I can strongly recommend. What else they got, Mark?
Yeah, well, the hooks itself, really good. You can get Nash, Fox, Corder, Gardner hooks, their own next gen hooks, which, as we mentioned before, of a different company, but they are from the same supplier as the old razor points that A's used to knock out, that everyone seems to rave about. Also, if your preference is for a hook that's not in that range, you can send your packet off to him. He will sharpen your hooks and send them back. But what Jamie's already mentioned, the hook sharpening kits that we've got, there is two sets. That they've got, you know, they differ slightly, you know, mainly in the you know, the diamond file. You know, there's a rougher and a smoother one, and this is what I like about it, because I've used files in the past that are just too narrow, and I'm not the steadiest of hander people, but these are quite wide files, and I find them very easy to use, don't you?
Yeah, that's what I preferred. I mean, the Jag kit is excellent as well. I do have I've had one of the Jag kits since they first came out, but my criticism with the Jag when we did the true review, I mean, they are fantastic, and they were, you know, the only one out there for quite a while, but the file is quite narrow, like you say. It's not, doesn't, you know, feels like you can slip off pretty easy, and, you know, it's very easy to damage those points while you're sharpening. So my criticism is, you know, it might just be me that's clumsy, but you know, I used to come off quite easy with the file, and also the stones that come with the Jag, they're fantastic, but I have to replace them fairly regularly, because it only takes a few weeks of sharpening and they go completely smooth, whereas the stones that come with these sharpening sets are about four times the size. There's a lot more surface area, and they're wider, they're fatter, they're just like big blocks of stone, and, you know, they look sort of less fancy because the Jag ones have got nice plastic molded handles and stuff, but there's not actually as much physical sharpening stone, whereas with these it's just two big blocks of stone that you get with it, like loads of it, like four sided as well, whereas the Jag one's like two sided. I do really like this Pinpoint stuff. I'm quite glad that they are coming on for a few weeks, and we hope that you support them.
Yeah, me too. And you know, also, well, we all know what an edge having mega sharp hooks doing. I found it very easy to do my own hooks. And also, if you are a retailer and you're interested in these products, you know, drop him a line, visit the website and drop him a line. And
yep, they've set up a new English domain just for this advertising, pinpoint-hooks.co.uk, and the original site is pinpoint-hooks.de if you have any problems with the UK site, because I know it's pretty new. He's just got it set up for us, hasn't he? So, and don't forget, you can get 10% off everything when you use the code CARPCAST10 for a 10% discount when you buy your stuff.
Yeah. And just as a last thing, also, Mark has also sent me a couple of cases to give away as prizes.
Ah,
so
okay.
I think the next one, we shall have I'll do it on the Facebook page, we'll run a guess the weight competition. You've got to guess the weight. Yep, you've got to guess the weight of the first fish that I will catch from the new syndicate. And that can be anywhere between 15 and 45 pounds.
What's your syndicate called?
I can't tell you that. It's called Shushmere.
Sorry, yeah. I'm just having a dig at people asking you publicly on the Facebook page.
Yeah. I've already said I had quite a lot of messages about Ike about how to get tickets and that, which really is absolutely nothing to do with me. So you have to forgive me. I'm not going secret squirrel. I'm just trying to avoid that situation again. I reply to everyone, but, well, yeah. I've no control whatsoever of tickets on any lake, so it's a waste of time.
And obviously you're presuming here that you are going to catch a fish at some point.
Well, I'm presuming it's going to be a carp as well, because there's no bream in it.
So what have we got to do? We're going to get, what, two packs, two sharpening kits, is it, we're giving away?
Yeah, I'll give away two sharpening kits for the two closest, and just guess the weight. And this competition will run until I catch one, so it could be next weekend, it could be next year. I hope it isn't.
Cool. So so when you hear this, where do they need to get the entries into?
Well, just reply to the post I'll make on the Facebook page when this goes out.
Yeah, we can put this. When you're fishing next?
I'll be fishing next, well, depending on whether they're spawning or not, because they've not done it. Hopefully this weekend for a couple of nights.
All right, we want to make the post then almost straight away. And thank you to Pinpoint Hooks for kindly donating two of the sharpening kits. Everybody loves a freebie, don't they? We like the odd competition.
Oh, it's my favourite four-letter word.
Yeah. Okay, so moving on. Oh, you've got a worth a look, haven't you, I see.
Worth a look.
Yeah, July's edition of Crafty Carpery is well worth a look because I'm in it.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's going on about big pits. You know, I had young Tom from there, Tom Morrison. He came out, did a load of pictures with us, and yeah, had quite a fun time. Drunk lots of tea, took loads of pictures, and got the article down. So, worth a look.
Yeah, go and check it out. There is another worth a look that I've seen this week, actually, and that's the Fox International, the challenge.
Worth a look.
They did a... It was actually a live thing. It's on YouTube. It's Mark Pictures and Harry Charrington that make all these. They've all been fantastic. I haven't had a chance to watch it yet, but everybody's been raving about it. So, yeah, if you go to the Fox page on YouTube, or you can watch it on the Fox International Facebook page. Yeah, it's the challenge, episode 11, the top-to-bottom challenge. Which is the 11th one they've done, and they've all been fantastic. Mark Pictures is just hilarious, and I know that everybody's been raving about this, so it's definitely worth a look, and I'm going to watch it as soon as I'm settled in France.
Yeah, I think I've not watched that one. I've seen it, though. Seen it advertised, but haven't Fox put a new Edges DVD out as well?
Ah, yes, yeah, I have seen that advertised as well. Yes, again, everybody has been raving about that.
Go and watch it and tell us how good it is.
Yep, Lewis, if you listen to this, why are you not sending me press releases for this sort of stuff? Again, we hope to get somebody from Fox on fairly regularly. But yeah, Edges Volume 4 was out on the 17th of June, by the look of it, which was last week. And there is a challenge with Mark Pictures on that as well. It's like an overseas challenge, I believe. 3.5 hours of footage. It's free. Go and grab it. I presume you can watch it on YouTube, which, yes, you can. Let's go to the Fox page on YouTube. Yeah, a couple of decent worth of looks there this week.
Worth a look.
I think we're going to keep this quite brief today because it's only a few days since we actually recorded the last one. I've seen virtually zero on the net. So I think we do a couple of listeners' questions, then we'll go to there's a good hour and 15 minutes of Kevin Nash, assuming I leave the odd little political debate in at the start, which I haven't decided. I'm going to leave it in there yet because it seems both Kevin and I are in the minority with our opinions on Brexit. So I don't know if we want to go upsetting our customers, but I do know there's been a propaganda campaign like no other. Remains to be seen. But yeah, have you got any listeners' questions there, Mark?
We have. We've got a couple to get through. Matt Wood says, once bait has been removed from the freezer, in our opinion, can bait be refrozen after, say, 24 or 48 hours and reused and refrozen a few times after that?
Ask us a question.
I know, I've done that plenty of times.
Yeah, I've done it loads and loads and loads of times. The bacteria that affects humans does not affect animals. We could get an expert, someone like Simon Scott, to confirm this, but I mean, from my personal experience, it makes no difference whatsoever. And I remember I think I mentioned this before, but in one of the early carp fishers, the Carp Society magazine, I remember an article specifically about a guy that reckoned, I forget who it was who wrote the article, but reckoned bait was way better within 12 hours of being out of the freezer, and he caught more fish on it if it was. So he used to take a thermos flask fishing with him. This is like obviously in the early 80s. I mean, we've got a lot of decent on the bank stuff now for you know, keeping stuff frozen, good cool boxes and whatever. But yeah, he used to put his like a kilo of bait inside a big thermos flask straight out of the freezer, and reckoned he caught better on bait that was within 12 hours out of the freezer. My personal opinion on that is maybe he did notice that, maybe he was just catching well and possibly needed some material for an article. I don't know, but what I do know is my bait's been out of the freezer dozens of times, and I've seen fish mop up the mouldiest, crappiest, horrible bait ever. I mean, if you remember the mainline bait back in the day, the Activate and stuff, you know, people used to deliberately leave it out till it all went white and then put it in the lake. Reckon it was better because it was full of all the enzymes and stuff coming out of the bait. But the bait was effectively going off, you know.
Yeah, and
I've seen many people catch like that.
Yeah, I remember one of the earliest memories of using mouldy bait was Ritual's Tutti Frutti out of the freezer. And yeah. I'd got this, and being a young kid, I'd not thrown it in, not thrown it away, and it needs to last me. It's my paper round money. And it had gone all like horrible and tacky and sticky, like it was all the sugars oozing out, and it was, you know, it just stunk like a tutti sour fruity. But my God, did the fish go mental for that.
Yeah.
I got tons on it, then I ran out.
We told a story on one of the, I don't know if it was on the extra or on the earlier carp casts, about Roger Bacon having a mega session in the 80s on some bait that he'd made up the night before. And when he got it out in the morning, something had happened to it, it had gone like vinegar, and he had a ridiculous session. And tried to recreate it and never got the bait like that again. I've watched countless things where I've seen bait that's gone green, like pellet, that's gone furry with mould on the lake bottom. You know, watched it, observed it from a boat and stuff, and it's been there 3 weeks, 4 weeks, and then you know, patches all over that people have baited beforehand, and then just the fish decide to have it one day and the whole lot's been wiped up. And have you ever heard of a fish floating up, you know, like popping up because of something it's eaten? I don't know if that's ever happened in my lifetime.
No, I can't think. I know there was, with Benson, there was a few people saying, oh, it's eating unprepared tigers, but it was a big fish and it was old.
Yeah, and actually that, yeah, I better readdress what I've just said. Yes, obviously unprepared particles can kill fish. I think there's no doubt about that. You need to boil or buy ready-made stuff. Lots of companies doing the ready-made stuff these days. You do need to prepare your particles properly, because that certainly can damage fish. But as far as bait going off mouldy, they eat it, and with no ill effects as far as I'm aware. And I don't think it has any less effectiveness. If anything, there are certain situations where it seems to have had more effectiveness when it's gone off.
Yeah. In fact, in my garage right now is a bucket full of hemp and pigeon conditioner, and I'm just waiting for it to go rancid and sour. Then it will be used. And it's one of the thinking tackles. I think it was Adam Pennon and Simon Scott on the Blue Pool, and Simon Scott had this like putrid mix that he's spooning in the margins, and doing what he does, catching a ton of fish.
Cool. Yes, let's do one more question, then we'll get Kevin Nash in, and we'll have to wrap this up.
Okie doke. Lee Cordingly, he says, he's just joined a syndicate and walked round yesterday. Can I get your and Jamie's advice on how you tackle this kind of water? It's a gravel pit, 6 acres, gin clear, and the bottom is covered in water cabbage. What would you use? Solid bags? And would the carp find it in amongst the dense water cabbage? Some areas, from the bottom to top of the water, the cabbage is 2 feet. Apart from the obvious clear areas, would you suggest anything else in this situation?
Ask us a question.
Not something I've ever come across.
Now, it makes me think of the old pictures of Ashley Poole.
Yeah, that's what I was imagining. That was that actual water cabbage, was it the same?
Yeah, it's like, well, like lily pads before they reach the surface, that sort of thing. Because Lee actually sent us some pictures of the water, and it looks exactly like, you know, the old Ashley Pool pictures from back in the day.
But, could you fish chods over the top of it with, you know, like stiff, some sort of stiff, you know, stiff section, whether it be fluorocarbon or lead core or something?
Yeah. I'm not sure chods would be my... my choice on there.
Depends how flat it is. If it's very, you know, if it's like carpet-y type thing and you can actually lay on it. No, the holes in it. I'd be more than happy putting bags in down the gaps, for sure.
Yeah. Oh, without a doubt. You know, instead of a bag, I might be tempted to put a big method ball of just, you know, scalded trout or halibut pellets down there, especially this time of year, the water's warm. The fish are going to sense the oils rising off it and get their head straight down there.
Yeah, that's a good shout. Like a really heavy method ball and just let it find its own way down. Yeah, certainly.
Yeah, you can bury your hook bait in there to protect it on its way down, tangle free.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. Yeah, solid bag or like that, and obviously find the clear areas.
Yeah, if it's nice and clear, just walking around, you know, little patches of bait in the margins, the spots here and there. I mean, 6 acres, it's not big. You can do plenty of circuits about and check your spots. And
yeah, as we always say, the best feature on any lake is the margins. So bottom of the marginal shelf before the cabbages start. It's always a good shout. I did have a chat with Kevin Nash earlier today, and
I know you guys like a mass debate in the car. It's Kevin Nash with the Nash Debate.
How's life, Jamie? Looking forward to your fishing trip?
Oh, mate, I can't wait. It's done me a favour that we're doing this early, to be fair. I've got Mark to do after you when he gets home from work at 5:30, and then that's me away.
Away. The one I'm most looking forward to is your... Tales of Lake Bled. That place is sounds fucking amazing.
Oh, have you heard about that trip?
No. Yeah, I heard you're going.
Right, yeah. I didn't know if you knew. Yeah, it's a real... It's exactly what I bought the camper van for, to be fair. You know, when I bought it over a year ago, I didn't have a lot of money to spare. Probably shouldn't have spent 17 grand on a van when I was skint, to be fair. But... it was a good deal, and my friend lent me the money, so I did it. But I wanted to do like a proper European road trip, and that's what this is. We've now rescheduled the ferry so that I can meet Alan in Amsterdam on the way home, because he's...
Oh, have you? Oh, he never told me that.
Yeah, but it's only happened yesterday, basically. So I'm getting the ferry from Hull to Rotterdam, mainly so that I can do that return. It's like an overnight ferry, doing a 12-hour drive from Rotterdam to Slovenia. I've got 12 days on Lake Bled. Then we're driving 4 or 5 hours further south into Croatia for a music festival that some friends of ours are running. Then we're driving from there to Amsterdam to meet Alan. Yeah, so the final bit's in Amsterdam. So, yeah, we're going to meet Alan and the guys there, and we get the overnight ferry back on a Monday. So yes, like a 2.5 week 3,000-mile round trip.
I did like your style on Carl Castle. He said, yeah, look, yeah, you won't get this every week because I don't make any money out of it. I'll do it for love and passion. I'll just make me chuckle.
You wouldn't believe the complaints we get if we don't put an episode out on time. I mean, literally a dozen emails to my Facebook message, a dozen to the group, posts all over the place tagging us in, where's the show, you know. One guy on Twitter even went, pull your fucking finger out, lads. I was like, this is free. You know, we appreciate the... Anyway, we've got a load of points to get through. I want to start off with one of the points from last time when we discussed the barbless hooks versus barbed hooks. I mean, I answered this on our Facebook page, but I'm sure I want you to... You're going to say something similar, but I'd like to hear it from you. The question was... after Kevin Nash was waxing lyrical about fish safety and barbless hooks, why does he sell barbed hooks?
It's an interesting question. I suppose I should have seen it coming. I'll defend myself by going back a bit in time. At the end of the 80s, the concept of the bent hook come out. and I jumped on it and brought out a range. Then in my fishing, I become very concerned about the horrendous damage bent hooks could do, and in particular, the fact they could double hook and sew together top and bottom lips. So I scrapped my stock, which was worth $60,000. Okay. Yeah. So I'm trying to point out, you know, when I feel there's a big issue, I'll do something about it. Now let's come to today. Then I could be a dictatorship, right? Now, I can't be a dictatorship. I made the decision that carp fishing is my lifestyle, the business is my lifestyle. Yeah, I used to work in engineering and earn silly amounts of money, but I hated it. Yeah, absolutely hated it. And starting Nash was never about, you know, getting out, exiting like Fox Ads and Preston with millions, you know, not about that, you know. And so, a little while ago, you know, in spite of having many offers to sell, I gave half the business to Lee, my son, and Adam, so they can take it to the next generation. So where this is going, we're not a dictatorship anymore. I have to listen to the views of my fellow directors. And basically, the view would be, it would be suicidal for our TT range, which is an important part of the business. And that then means, you know, the 80 families we employ, it puts pressure on that. And so I am fighting this cause in the name of Kevin Nash, not in the name of Nash Tackle, with the hope that maybe one day people might get it and sufficient number of clubs. Yeah, I was really pointing this at the fisheries and the clubs. You know, they're the ones who can make the difference here. If they all say no barbed hooks, and then the demand for barbed hooks will drop to a level where I can then say, boys, it's not worth keeping them in stock. Yeah, but it takes a long. It took me 20 years to get lead discharge across, and there's still probably only 5-10% of anglers who understand if they object to lead, they actually might land that carp rather than lose it. You know, but that's the way I'm going with it. Yeah, we're not. I can't be a dictator anymore. I've got to. It is almost political now. But I personally, Kevin Nash, am championing that cause, not Nash Tackle.
Fair enough. No, I mean, one of the points I made was that barbed hooks are still fine in a competent angler's hand. You know, an angler that can unhook a fish and stuff as well. You know, without ripping the mouth apart, it's probably the more novice angler that benefits from barbless hooks.
True, so but, I mean, but a competent angler can still get a cut off and end up having the fish tethered. Just so, you know, this is my argument. Don't ban leaders, because a leader can stop you getting a cut off. Yeah, look at what stops carp getting off that line, and it's a barbed hook.
Yeah,
that's where I'm coming. You know, the only safe rig is the one where it can get off the hook.
I agree. Thank you for clearing that up. There's a discussion that we had on last week's Carp Talk, which only came out at Carp Talk, Carp Cast, which only came out a few days ago, so I don't know if you've had a chance to listen to it yet. But there's been a few, there's been three fish in particular from two different lakes that have just been caught recently for the first time in 5 years. Since we've discussed that, a couple of people have posted other examples of fish that have been out in the last few weeks that haven't been out for exactly 5 years. What, so
I haven't heard this.
Do you have an opinion on this, or do you have a reason? Is there something similar to conditions this year? Do you think it's a conditions thing? Do you think there's, for some reason, the carp have dropped the guard?
If you're saying there's an unusually large number of fish that haven't been caught for a very long time suddenly coming out,
yeah.
I guess I've got to put it down to a condition thing. The carp, I would say, it's because of the conditions that happened over the winter, you know, the prolonged cold spring. It'd be something like that, I would guess. And that's what you're saying. It seems that a disproportionate number of fish suddenly that, you know,
yeah.
Yeah, you're always, oh, that fish ain't been out for years. But you're saying that percentage has gone through the roof now, are you?
I'm saying that, yeah, there's a few that have come to my attention in the space of 2 weeks. So, I mean, that's, you know, with social media, I mean, one of the benefits of social media is the instant access to information. So you tend to notice these things. And since we've mentioned it, a couple of people messaged me saying same things happen on their lake, fish they thought was dead, you know. And coincidentally, it's also 5 years. So I think there must be something that's happened this year that's similar to 5 years ago. And then what is
it's
it?
It's kind of interesting. Sorry, it's kind of interesting. You know, Steve O'Rourke, who owns the manor, great friend of mine, you know, and he was saying, oh, mild winter, the fish are going to be big weights, and other people were saying that. Yeah, I think it's actually more or less the opposite. You know, they've gone through the winter, and they was kept awake, if you like, yeah. Because they, so they had to feed, that energy they was burning. But there wasn't enough food, and you know that's what winter's about. And that's why they shut down. There's not enough food. So in essence, they were burning more energy than they gained. Then we went into that real cold snap. So. Yeah. I could suggest they lost the opportunity in, say, an early spring when everything kicks off to get that weight back on. So it could quite simply be a starvation issue. They've had to drop their guard because they're hungrier than normal. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I agree. I agree that it looked like we were going to get some amazing weights this spring because they fed right through winter. And then we had a really late cold spell, didn't we? Which actually set water temperatures. You know, the start of spring, we were actually behind normal considering, you know, the water stayed warm all winter, really. So, yeah, I completely agree. It could be that. I mean, so more
Another thing, Jamie, just struck me. Sorry, mate, just struck me, yeah? Yeah, I was stunned. We was showing 10 degrees, right? Within a week, it shot up to 17, 18, and that kicked the fish off spawning here.
The lake went silly, didn't it? Yeah.
So you got those fish, you know, that never had that opportunity of fattening up in spring. They suddenly, you know, from starvation, were forced to spawn because that key temperature come.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It very probably is something like that. In your experience more generally, I mean, I know from your own lakes and stuff, do you find that there's certain percentage of the stock that just don't get caught as often as the others and maybe can go 2-3 years regularly?
Oh, without a doubt. You know, there's a fish in the cops. You know, it's a really long mirror. It's a maniac. I hooked it once. And it took me 3/4 of the way down the lake. Yeah, it was lucky I had Nigel Bovaway with me. I was with a loss. It was Nick one, Pearl one through 6 lily beds. Yeah, and that was £34, an absolute animal. Never seen it since on the bank. You know, the emperor. You know, couldn't catch that for what 8 years, and then you know, when a distic are hooking it, it starts coming out. You know, so that's another interesting thing. You know, fish can go a long time. And then when it starts coming out, you know, it's kind of, if it's got used to it, it's almost like when you open the fishery. You know, I saw it on the cops, I warned Gary about it. When their first fish for is a massive shock when they get caught that first time. You know, and so it takes 3-4 years before, you know, a fishery to start regularly producing fish.
Yeah.
You know? You know, so there's so many things going on for why they disappear for so long. You know, it's a very interesting subject. Very interesting subject.
Yeah, I'll find another one
in the mix that came up the other day, right? And this fascinates me. I'll give you a bit of advice on possibly fishery owners on how you can grow massive carp, right? Because it's all about this, you know, you say about these uncaught ones and are they just hungry? Starve them for 6 months.
Yeah.
Right? I'll tell you where I'm going. I'm not in any way suggesting this, but when this fish Starlane, after I fished Starlane, there's a guy on there, and he went down on the August bank holiday, caught a carp, which is one I had probably caught over the last 10 years. It never, when I caught it, gone bigger than 17, and he actually had it at 17. He sacked it that night, okay? Got up in the morning and his bank sticks disappeared. Some kids are coming along taking his bank stick out and the carp was lost in the lake, in the sack, right? Another mate of mine was fishing on Boxing Day, cast out, snagged something. He's got the sack.
Yeah.
Okay? The fish was perfectly healthy. He said it was a little bit red in his belly and he weighed it and it was 15 pounds. So in that 4 months, whatever, it dropped 2 pounds, okay? Within a year, Jamie, I kid you not, remember that fish had never gone bigger than 17 over the 10 years I caught it. It was over 30.
Wow.
And it never dropped down below 30. I'll give you another one. What they call that fish at Luke Moffat's, you know, the scar.
The scarfish, yeah.
The story I've heard is that had a rope, or somehow it was tethered up for a long time.
Yeah.
and that become the world record, did it, or one of the biggest fish in Europe?
That's where I'm going
tonight. It's an interesting one. Yeah, oh, I know you are. That's what I mean to. It's an interesting one, isn't it?
It happened with the Annie, if you remember. The Annie,
The Annie was for sure missing and tethered. There's no doubt about that. Yeah, we knew where it was tethered. Just couldn't get to it. And that went down, I believe, to 28 pounds. Yeah, and then they say, sod this, I'm not going to be starved like that again. I'm going to go on the binge. It's bizarre. Carp are such interesting animals.
Yeah, I've seen that exact situation happen a number of times. Like a tethered fish has just become the biggest fish in the lake once it starts eating. Mm. And you can artificially do that. And an example is the Shallow Lagoon on the St. Ives complex. That lake didn't have many fish in. It was stocked from one of the small lake on the St. Ives complex. You had a lagoon with a lady that we all fished. Then there was two like very small lakes at the back that just had a load of stunted upper doubles to low 20s that had been in there years. You know, occasionally people had like floater fish from just caught the odd 18-pound and 19-pound. Anyway, they stocked the Shallow Lagoon with the fish from that lake that had been in there years, never got bigger than 20. Within 2-3 years, we're probably 7 years on now, but it's now done 50s, a new number of 40s, and all the fish are big 30s that were stocked.
I've seen that myself, say that my conclusion is there's no such thing as a stunted fish. I know a lake where they was 15 years old and they never went over 10 pounds. Some of them got moved, and within another 7-8 years, they was over 30.
Just going into a better environment with food. Mm-hmm. And if anything, I think it helps them. Like you say, it's the same thing as that starvation thing. They've probably been undernourished for all that time. Mm-hmm. Put them in a nice big lake, give them a load of bait, and all of a sudden they rock it. That's the way, I think, to maybe grow a big fish water is to take a stock, put them in a smaller lake, you know, don't give them enough to eat, leave them a few years and then bang them in the main lake you're going to put them in and feed them. Maybe you can.
When I stock my new lake, I go down the copse in the church, sack a dozen of the biggest ones for 6 months and then move them over there. Public carp anglers, I stress I am joking.
Not a bad idea. Yeah, just sack them. Do what they did with the scarfish. I think it was anchored with a rope to the back of the restaurant. But I've seen that happen so many times. It's interesting though. Like you say, carp are extremely interesting. Moving on, I believe you like the Rob Hughes and Lloyd interview. Scott Lloyd.
Tommy, I gotta say this. I become a massive fan of Carpcast. As a medium, I think it gives more than what any other medium does. You know, the in-depth interview, you really get to understand what the person's about, you know, and there's nothing else out there I can think that does that in carp fishing. You know, Rob Hughes, when he's talked about so many interesting things, you know, it's so interesting to see how he's championing angling on telly, but it was the thing about how he's managed our, you know, team, you know, our carp team, he's just looked at it, you know, as a pure exercise. They're going to win. He's applied diet and everything you would for top athletes and footballers. You know, I was in such admiration listening to that, you know, that interview. And you know, it could only have happened on Carpcast or today. Yeah. I would never have got all that information. And you know, Lloyd, you say, you know, I listened to that and I thought that kid is a carp angler. You know, he's hunting them. You know, and I just found it so interesting, especially stuff, you know, that fishy caught off the bait there, where we've all seen that. You know, that kid, you know, he's just well above average, you know. So I like the fact he went to this water and he decided to fish it on his terms. You know, that's what I learned from Harefield. Don't go with the pack, you know, so he wasn't running out, just dropping bait. He decided to try and hunt them and look for them in the margin, so he's spending all days up trees, you know. I just so admired the kids, you know, so respected him. And so I didn't even know the lad until I heard that, you know. And I think that is a unique thing that Carpcast is bringing. So, you know, stop having holidays and give us the content every week, please.
Oh, you reminded me as well of the Savoy, or the Savoy rotor was the Toad rotor, was it? Or Toads?
It was the Toads, yeah, yeah. And slight correction, although it was a correction on one or two back, but then I listened to an earlier one, and actually it was put right there. There was a massive kickoff when those long fields fish were moved to Halton. Oh, I'm never going to fish that. Anyone who fishes that, he's fishing, you know, he's out of order, they're wrong as they've been moved, you know. Yeah, at the time there was a massive kickoff.
Yeah, yeah.
And also John Baker, that's the other one. Yeah. John Baker never ever had anything to do with bait 78.
Right, okay.
Bait 78, I think I'm right in saying it was a guy called Walker. I think his son was Dave Walker.
Right.
He was a carp angling element. And so they opened this shop selling carp bait ingredients. It was a massive emotive issue at the time because Fred Wilter had ordained that no one should make a profit or personal gain out of carp fishing. And they actually, you know, as ridiculous as it sounds, I was having their window bricked. Now that's how that's how much Fred was listened to, you know, the Pope had spoken. You know, and I think it's this way around. After they started bait 78 saying carp baits, they then got the census business and started importing census ground baits. I think it was that way around. But it was definitely, sure, it was, Walker was the surname. Certainly John Baker's nothing to do with it. You know, I knew John Baker back in those days.
Hey, I know you're quite passionate about bait, and you pulled, I mean, when we discussed, I think it was two shows ago now, where we were discussing bait, you know.
Did I hear that right?
Well, Mark made the comment that, you know, a lot of baits are the same. I just didn't argue with him. My opinion on that is they're all of a reasonable quality enough to catch fish on, but some are better than others. I mean, that's my actual opinion.
I got it, you was both kind of saying there's not much difference in bait effectiveness.
I think I probably just didn't want to.
Is Jamie really saying that?
No, I probably didn't want to go too deep with Mark on that because we were pushed for time or something, and we can ramble on as it is. But no, I mean, if somebody forced me to use any of the companies that we've all heard of, you know, I mean, as many companies I've not heard of, but all the main ones, somebody forced me to use that to catch some fish, I'm pretty sure I would still catch fish when I was meant to catch fish.
Yeah, absolutely.
When we talk.
The point I was. Couldn't believe and say, yeah, you know, you was there, yeah, you know, you saw the difference that squid extract we had made, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, hang on, Jane, you've been there and seen that occasionally something comes up that nothing can compete with. Yeah, yeah. So I was quite surprised by your comments. A great example is Ollie Davis, you know, he's just had that amazing wood carving from Halton.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I rang him yesterday to congratulate him, and he's using the key flake. Now, I championed that on the governor, you know, the last DVD I did, ever will do, because I've seen the difference that key flake can make. And, you know, he told me out of the last 14 fish caught over Halton in the boat lake, he's had 9 of them in 8 days. Now, you know what Halton's like, you know, and the level of anglers on there. That is purely down to key flake. And, of course, he's a great angler, you know, and other things, you know, but, you know, but, you know, so there's a great example of where he's had a bait edge.
You've only got to look at Simon Crowe's results this year, well, the last 12 months since using the key as well. I mean, he's obviously a fantastic angler. He works super hard. He's there on the overnighters. I'm pretty sure he's going to outfish most people on any bait, but something's different this last 12 months, and he's the first one to say it's his bait. You know, he's been getting extraordinary results.
I don't know that syndicate, so I forget the names of these northern wolves, but you know it, that syndicate that he smashed in the winter, I think the previous winter he really struggled. He only had 2 fish, you know, switched to, as you say, switched to bait, and he absolutely annihilated it, didn't he?
Yeah. He did, yeah. And I know where...
Yeah, it's one of them. You know, give a top angler a decent bait, he's going to catch. Give a top angler an edging bait, and he's going to slaughter it.
Yeah, it does seem to be to be what Crowy's been doing this year. I mean, I'm heading to Gravier's tonight for a week. Not a great week either because they spawned late in France. I think they're actually spawning now on that lake. Mm. I know Luke's kind of ropes off the areas where the fish are currently. So I mean, I'm going there slightly deflated. There was a bit of, with all that rain we'd had in France, there was a bit of me hoping they hadn't spawned, because fishing this late in the year, they're almost always spawned in France, but they've had extremely wet weather, and as of the start of last week they hadn't spawned but were grouping up. They've got the first few days of 30 plus degrees weather, started yesterday, running through till Saturday, so I'm pretty sure they'll have spawned by the time we get there. So slightly disappointed.
Deflated
there.
In terms of weights, or deflated that you think they still might not start his feeding? Because, you know, they're probably going to really munch 6-7 days after they spawned.
Yeah,
or most... You're talking about deflated by weights.
No, not by weights. I mean, that's I'm fishing that place for two fish, really. There are the rest of the stock. There are loads of better lakes in France that have that, the medium stock, you know, the 40s and 50s. It's probably not a very good lake for that, but you've got the two big ones, the 80 and the 90. And they're always
a cultured hook bait and a bit of a keef lake.
That's exactly what I'm taking. I mean, you didn't have
a little trap, subtle little trap.
Yeah. You didn't have any key flake in stock, but I think I've got some in my freezer. I've got a few key in my freezer anyway. But yeah, I'm taking the key and I'm really interested. The last time I went and caught fish was 2-3 years ago. And again, it was not a prime week. It was a week at the end of June, you know, a few weeks after spawning. And the people had been on before us had four fish, and the people that were there the week after us had four fish. We sadly, not me, but it was my bait, we as a group had 29 fish. It was four the week before and four the week after, and I was using the squid, the S mix, but the version that I had of it, which had some salt in it and it had the banana flavour in it. So it's basically the S mix with banana and salt that Gary used to do for me. And Luke, I mean, he's a miserable git at the best of times. Doesn't particularly like carp anglers, but
I've heard that actually. I've heard that.
He's very protective over his fish. He's a catfish angler. He doesn't like carp anglers as a rule, and I get the impression he don't like people catching his fish either. He doesn't do a lot to help you, put it that way. But anyway, you know, he was the first to say, he went, you know, as much as you lads might think you're good anglers, he said, the people here last week were good anglers, and it was the cordal lot the week after. He went, you know, don't think it's you, it's your bait. That's the first thing he said to me, you know, in his miserable old way. He said, couldn't give us a compliment.
I remember last year, you know, the office had a phone call from Tim Paisley. He was on Teleax, you know, and a guy had, I think he was doing, you know, Tim does long sessions, only 2-3 weeks, a guy going out for a week, and he raped it on the key. And one of the office were going down there, what's his name? What's the guy who's now editor of Cartworld? He used to be at Angling Times.
Steve Broad.
Steve Broad.
Yeah.
He was going down to join Tim, and Tim's rang Steve, oh, can you ring Nashy and get some key brought down? You know, he's mental attitude is, well, if I ain't got key, I might as well go home, you know. Not just same key as you're saying, but yeah, the point was, you know, I've been carp fishing a long time. I've gone through all the bait developments. I saw the massive difference HMVs made when we got on, and the size of fish they caught. Then I saw the massive difference when we got on particles. You know, these are things they've never seen before, and they worked. You know, I've gone through the whole body thing, and from time to time I've seen the incredible difference, you know, a bait can make, like that squid extract that you were talking about, baits switching off. I will say Mainline's best ever bait was at Grange. I was up against that Grange, and we had the Sting. And, you know, the Sting, I made the, you know, at the time I thought, no one, I believed it actually, and I stand by it, I don't believe any bait company had ever come up with a bait that could get me a Nash bait. That Grange, I said to Gary's dangerous, you know. I said, I've just got the edge with the Sting, but only just, mate. And then we was on the reservoir, you know, a load of Mainline guys and me and a couple of others. And then we got to, I think it was October, it was a deep reservoir. It was as if a switch, you know, was clicked off. I could not catch to save my life on that Sting. Yeah, really? And Grange boys carried on catching. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, the Grange was
an amazing bait, but it's only a summer bait. As soon as that temperature drops, you know,
this definitely happened to me. It was a clear change in conditions. We'd gone from a hot summer to autumn, basically in space of 2 days, and the bait just switched off. I couldn't get a bite.
Yeah. It's common knowledge now that fish meals, you know, you've got the other types of fish meals that are high content, they're the ones that do it, you know. So, why it done my head is, you know, I'm a campaign angler, Jamie. I just want to keep applying that bait, you know, throughout the seasons. I don't want to be thinking about switching on, about put all my focus and, you know, concentration on it. But, you know, that was an eye-opener. And kind of what I've learned since, there is no bait that is effective at the same level throughout the seasons. You know,
you've so got to change.
And this is where the squid and the S baits went. They were untouchable in some seasons, and you held your own in the other seasons, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm about trying to find a bait where I can keep applying it and still believe, you know, I mean, we're a chance, but there is no bait that is red hot summer, winter. No bait at all.
Do you think with some slight adaptions in, so obviously, I mean, I used to use the S-Mix, the Scopex Squid, for years, and then I used to have it made on the all-season mix come the autumn.
Yeah,
which,
exactly.
So,
and that's why we designed that, to keep squid going. The all-season, you know, said what it did on the packet, but that was more, I'd reword that, autumn to spring. You know, the S-Mix was lethal in the summer, with its fish meal content. So exactly as you're saying, I would switch to the all-season as soon as the temperature started dropping, and then go back to the S-Mix when they started raising again.
Yeah, although I did catch...
keeping the rest of the labels, you know.
I did catch all year round on the S-Mix, to be fair. I mean, I had many winters where I caught well. For some reason, the Scopex Squid and the various flavours of it didn't seem like a really heavy bait. You know, I know a lot of people used it through the winter and fished well with
it. I spent a lot of time testing it. My response would be, okay, you caught well, mate, but if you cut it with the all season and winter or switch, you probably would have caught even weller.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, bait is it's something that, you know, I've learned through experience, but I still don't know the ins and outs. I'm speaking to a number of people that do know their stuff about bait.
Yeah, sorry. Did you hear that, by the way, 10 seconds ago?
No.
A dirty great cop's comment. I'm you know, one of the babies who moved up to the office stock, like, just jumped in front of me about 10 foot away. He's a mid 30, easy. Unbelievable. Everyone's run out of the office next door to look at it.
But nothing. I mean, it's the dream, isn't it? You're there in the office working and you've got mid 30s lumping out next door. It's
sorry, just... mate. I lost the track. You lost the track. Sorry, what was you saying?
Just bait in general. I mean, I hope to get Gary on at some point in the future, maybe give him a nudge next time you speak to him.
In fact, I'm meeting him tomorrow. I'll say, look, when Jamie decides, His Majesty will present his public with another carp cast, maybe you can get Basie on. You'll go on there. The one thing about Gary, he never stops talking. Yeah, that'd be your problem.
I know.
He's so passionate about baits, you know.
He's an expert, you know. I put my trust in him for 15 years or so. I think I was introduced to you guys, and it's... you know, like I say, the problem is you ring him and it's like, he's like, what do you want? I'm busy. And then an hour and a half later, blown your mind with stuff.
I have it with him all the time. I ring him up, blah, blah. You can't get him off the phone. Gary, I've got to go and do some work. Gary, I need to go and do this. And he's still doing it. And then he turns around and says, I've got to go. I'm busy. I've been trying to tell you that for an hour, Gary. He's one of the own.
Difference is he blows your mind during that chat. He's the most off-the-wall logical fish thinker I've ever spoke to. You know, he just comes out with something you never thought of, but just so obvious. And I don't know, he's just he's a minor.
He's one of them, isn't he? He's one of them where you can, meet him, sit on the bank with him, and 3 days later you got jawache or you got earache. sort of people who just hit it off. He's just constantly talking, you know. Yeah, he's one of them, isn't he? You know, he's just got that ability.
You mentioned the cops a minute ago. I mean, how's it been going on there? It's been close to spawning recently, hasn't it?
It's closed for spawning, and we're opening beginning of July.
Yep.
So now the website's live and people can book for £500 a week. The stunning thing is, after the success of the auction, so we've got so few bookings. Actually, I met a guy this morning who has got a PhD, and when I told him, he said, what? I went on there, and it looked like it was all blocked out for years, so I need to talk to my son about this, who's running this. Is it giving people the impression it's blocked out for the year? Because it doesn't make sense. I've just, fighting this Carp Society calls, which, by the way, could I get my soapbox about that one? I'll put the lakes up, and they've got £4,000 in minutes, so... Wow. I don't know what's going on here. Yeah, I really don't know what's going on here. But yeah.
So basically, you can now just pick a week and book it. You can now just pick a week and book it.
Pick a week and book it. Yep. Yeah. Right. Pick a week and book it. Pay £500 and you've got the chance of definitely fishing for a 60 plus common. I saw the wood carving yesterday. And if that fish ain't 60, I'm going to sell me Reuben Heaton scales and get some Nash ones.
So nashlakes.com is it? The website for that, I'm pretty sure it is. Nashlakes.com, yeah, it is. And you can go on there, book a week on either on the church or the cops, I guess.
And the other thing, we're massively working hard now, is on Royston. It's really shaping up. Alan, getting a bit scared, I guess, I think that, he wasn't going to be ready. He, bless him, has not only done his 60-hour week, he's been going up there, working, doing work parties. And what that lad has achieved in less than 2 weeks gobsmacked me. I went up there on Monday and... I was stunned, Jamie. I truly was stunned how it's been transformed in 2 weeks. I was almost excited and looking forward to your face when you see it. It's really shaping up now. And fish everywhere. They're ready to be caught, mate. And I think they will be caught, because they'll be caught at least once. I've been baiting it twice a week with 50 kilos of boilies. And they are just clouding up and chucking up everywhere. They would look really fat and prime. Yeah, it's getting exciting. That's not long now, is it?
What do we know about the stock then? There's two lakes, isn't there?
You got the two lakes, the long one, which we're probably going to call kingfishers, because there's always a family of kingfishers nesting the wall. Then you've got the round one, that's about 4 acres, and then you've got the round one, which I think, if I'm right in memory, is 4.75 acres. They both had stock, but we put something, I would guess, so I've lost track now, we put at least 200, probably near 300 fish in them. For sure they've got good stock levels. In fact, Adam said the first work party went up, it was really hot, and he said he couldn't believe it. Everywhere he was looking on the round lake, there was groups of carp. He said, one group was 30, another group was 5, there was another 10 there. It just blew him away how many carp he saw. I think we've definitely got a fish around 40 in both that we've seen. Obviously, a lot are going to be doubles, because the young fish we purchased, but there'll be a good splatter in the 20s, and it won't be long. I think we've got a few 30s, but I don't think it'll be long before we've got a majority over £20, and a lot of them going into 30s. Lovely scaly fish as well, the majority, but we've also seen these real dark fish. We've seen a dark mirror that could have been 30, a black common that could have been 30, and they're definitely the residents. We don't know much about what was in there before we bought it, so you've got the unknown factor as well,
and again, is it the same website, nashlakes.com, to book it, or how's it going to work with the day tickets and stuff?
Right, well, that's not up and running yet, but basically it will be on the same website. It's day ticket, as I've taken advice from Gary Bays on this, and also I think Erickson Willows do the same. We're going to basically make it into a club. So they pay a nominal fee of £25, and that's, if you like, a lifetime membership, or as long as we have the water. But since we own it, it should, in theory, be a lifetime membership. But that does a number of things. The most important one is that they're kind of accountable, and if they book a swim and they leave litter or whatever, we know who they are. you know, because they're a member. So, yeah, so we can hopefully achieve a much better level of management and, you know, make sure that, you know, there's a lot less people that cause grief. And then they will go online and book their session and pay for their ticket. I think Willows do it the same way.
Yeah.
So they only pay, so they go online and pay. Yeah, we're in this world now where people are used to paying everything online. So I think it's time to get away from, you know, an old boy bailiff walking around and collecting money, you know. It just be, you know, simpler, more efficient, you know. So that's how we're going to do it. The site, there's a lot of work in this site. It's a massive site to build and do that element, but I'm hoping we'll have it up for really the beginning of August, you know, so people can see what it's all about. I know Alan and Ollie were up there the other day doing amazing footage, because the lake we're going to call the Kingfishers in particular is massively snaggy. We've had divers in there, but, you know, what we didn't realise was there's full grown trees growing out the bottom.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah. Alan said there's one where you wouldn't be able to put your arms around it, you know, so the poor old divers have killed themselves trying to saw through these trees. And anyway, cut long story short, we put a road in one side, and the digger driver, thanks John, if you're listening, he's also a carpenter, just been so accommodating, he come over and the divers have marked four or five of these big trees, and he just pulled them out. You know, the back of his digger is coming up, but, you know, massive trees he's pulled out. So he's coming back in again to help us do that. You know, but so it's been a lot of work, a lot of work, you know. But we're getting there, mate. We're getting there.
Cool. Something we've mentioned a few times on recent Carpcasts is the Carp Society saga. You alluded it to before that you had an opinion about the situation. I mean, do you want to share it?
Do you know what? I don't wish to get myself in trouble here and instigate violence, but I've just got one simple way of looking at this. You know, those scum are trying to steal what is the property of the UK carp fishers, anglers. You know, it is not something that you can call your own and try and sell. You know, the Carp Society started for the common good of the carp community, and that fishery was bought for carp anglers.
With carp anglers' money.
With carp anglers' money. So how dare these individuals, one of which I never did trust, are trying to, you know, steal this off of UK carp anglers. I think they need a slap.
Yes.
And what's stunned me more than anything, you know, now we're having to, all contribute to this fighting fund. Don't get me wrong, I'll happily chuck, you know, the cops and church up for auction, do whatever I can. That's not the point. But now we're having to contribute to this fighting fund because they're still on the scene trying to, you know, still nick it from carp anglers. If I'd been them or they'd been in Essex, you know, I would have emigrated before they got slaughtered. I'm just stunned. I'm just stunned they've got the audacity to, A, have done it in the first place, B, still be here.
They're still trying to get the money, aren't they? They're not going, okay, we've been caught, there you go, lads, we tried. You know, they're still fighting, and they're trying to use the Carp Society's money to fight. This is after they've all been taking illegal payments, you know. I'm glad you feel the same way, because there's a lot
of... You have to ask yourself the integrity of these individuals. You really have. You know, they've got no integrity, have they? They're fools, they're thieves. Unbelievable.
I called for a boycott of their consumer, you know, angling show last year, and it didn't seem to have much effect. A lot of people saying, oh, well, you know, it's a show, we've always gone.
No, Johnny.
It was just lying in their pockets.
No, it wasn't about that, Johnny. I'll put that right. A lot of time I'm working behind the scenes, or I'm involved behind the scenes. I was in on this right from the beginning, because Paul Boyd, whatever his name is, he's the one who tipped us off.
Yeah. Right?
And he, at one point, was going to walk away. Yeah, and I pleaded with him, really, you know, the kind of way, you know, I'm saying to you, look, you know, this is about, you know, the carping community, carp anglers. And I like to think that fired him up, because he's done so much in, you know, getting this out in the open and everything. But where I'm going with this, he rang me up one day and said, look, you've got to boycott the Carp Society. Well, also, you know, I don't think Rob Hughes. You know, Rob Hughes has been asked his opinion on your programme and what's going on behind the scenes. But again, Rob Hughes has been in on this from the beginning, and I spoke to him, and his advice was, we don't want to trash the Carp Society, i.e. destroy the conference. Yeah, you know, because, so they was advising, yeah, they was advising, go along, you know, it was a, you know, it was a tough decision to make, but they were saying go along so we can keep the event going rather than trash it and maybe we can't, you know, can't bring it back later. So that was why we went and didn't boycott it.
But yeah, it, that know, makes sense for
one.
The
it was a tough one.
Yeah, that, knowing that, you know, there was going to be a takeover at some point, as has happened now, then yeah, it completely makes sense.
This has been,
you know,
going
not
on. This has been
it.
Going on. Yeah, yeah. You know, this is, you know, this has come out in the open now, but this has been going on. What? Last November's CarpCon. It was probably early the beginning of, you know, last year that this, you know, people begin to know about this, and, you know, so it's been going on all that time, and it was a kind of thing where information was being extracted from the Carp Society and given to the right people without, you know, these certain individuals knowing about it. So it had to be managed secretly and done in a specific way, you know, and so it's still going on and on. But it's interesting, Julian Cundy's comments. You know, in the beginning, everyone was really passionate and enthusiastic about the Carp Society, and they gave their time for nothing and all that. And so we had the magazine, you know, we had the regional meetings. I've lost count, probably, the number of fishings I did for kids, but it slowly deteriorated, you know, in a lot of ways. I don't believe it's viable to bring a magazine out, massive cost of print. The only way may be an e-zine, but someone has got to have the passion to do that free. The regional meetings, yeah, you know, some of them could be got up and going, and people with BCSG still have a meeting in Essex, you know. I absolutely am surprised how people will charge to go to one. I really am, you know, and I didn't kind of agree with you, yeah. When I, you know, I was a lot younger, I used to drive the length and breadth of the country, putting on slideshows. So in a way, yeah, you know, I did it for the passion and whatever. But yeah, you know, I'm really trying to establish myself, aren't I? You know, get more, you know, get more famous, if you like. You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, the point is, you know, these anglers, if they want to go for the graft, you know, this little Lloyd is talking about, if they want to go for the graft, you know, of, it's like a band, isn't it? You know, a band starts, you know, they'll be paying for nothing in pubs, they'll be sleeping in transits, you know, hoping one day to make it. And the point is, between then and now, it's a different world. These lads, if they put the graft in there, they'll be a better thing. They can commercially make it, because they'll then be recognised by sponsors, bait companies or whatever, and, you know, and they'll grab them, so they're starting to get an income. So I do not agree that they should charge to, you know, to basically, you know, just do a meeting, show a few slides and talk to anglers. You know, I've got a lovely story here. I got a phone call once from the Carp Society RO in Newcastle. And he said, oh, well, you can't. I'd done a big slideshow, I think 26 venues. It was the mid-90s. And he got to hear about it. And he said, will you come up to Newcastle? I said, oh, no. I said, it's just too far. I'm too busy. I said, you know, it's a massive one. He said, that's what everyone says, Kevin. He said, we never get anyone to speak. We know what a soppy sod I am. So I agreed, right? It's getting nearer and nearer. I had a massive workload the day before. I just thought, I haven't got the time to spend a day driving to Newcastle and then a day back. So I thought, I'm going to fly. So in short, I think it cost me 200 odd quid of my money, yeah, and I flew up there and did this talk, and I was absolutely gobsmacked, because he said, no, people won't come up, there's not many of us. I was absolutely gobsmacked. There was about 80 people in that hall, you know, and I've there's areas of England where you won't get that figure. You know, I used to get 180 when I was an RO in Essex for the CAA, and that was about the biggest number you got. So to get 80 in Newcastle, I didn't know there was carp in Newcastle. That's not bad going, is it?
Yeah.
Anyway, I've done this talk, finished, and then people started coming up, and this couple come up, so enjoyable, loved it. Oh yeah, where do you carp fish? Well, actually, we don't carp fish. I beg your pardon. We're from the Rotary Club. I went, what? I said, oh yeah, we're from the Rotary Club. We just come along. I went, oh right. There's another couple of guys behind them. Oh, thanks, that was well done, so informative, loved it. Where do you carp fish? Oh, we don't. We're from the Pigeon Fences, Racing Pigeon Association. I mean, what? Cut long story short, there's about 10 fucking carp anglers in there, James. he invited all these other local organisations to make up the numbers. It was funny. Yeah.
I think in regards to payment, my opinion is if somebody's making out of money, if somebody's making money out of it, so should the entertainer.
If they're charging personal profit, I agree. But
yeah, if the bar staff are getting paid, pretty much anybody. I mean, I mentioned this before, but as a band, we were always expected to play for free for events, charity dues, weddings, and every other person in that building was getting paid bar us.
The reality is an RO would never make a profit. There was a time where, I used to book halls in pubs, and the landlord would take the view, I'll be bringing him all these extra customers for a drink, but that kind of ended. Some people might still be able to do it, but now you get a hall, you've got to pay for the hall, so you've got to charge people to come to the door. You try and, normally when I used to do the auction was just to help cover the cost of the hall, and often I was out of pocket, so what? Yeah. You basically can't make a profit out of a car meeting, and it's so there's no funds to go back to head office as has been suggested, but there was a time, the Carp Society, as we know, has had a checkered history, look at it now, and there was a time when they was really in trouble, and I was asked if I'd go in there and sort their finances out, and I did for a very short while, mainly for the reason because a lot of these kind of do-gooders, don't get me wrong, great people with the right motives, but they're just not getting it. But I listened to the problems and where the finances are getting drained, and I turned around and said, my conclusion is the Carp Society should become a fishery club. It's as simple as that. Yeah, and that's where they could represent carp anglers, generate funds to do other stuff, and put something back into carp fishing. And so they got, what's the Lake of Commons in?
Oh, yeah. it's gone out of my head. It's just down the road from Horseshoe. Farriers.
My view is that should not be a syndicate. I think Horseshoe should be day ticket. I don't think it is day ticket, is it? How's that Horseshoe work?
Used to be able to buy day tickets. Yeah, you have to join the club and then you can buy day tickets, yeah.
Yeah, my view is something like we're doing at Royston. There should be a nominal fee to be a member of the Carp Society, and the Carp Society should max out its profit potential, and that will always be in day tickets rather than syndicates like they've done at Farriers. And from that, they'll make more funds to pile into more fisheries, and that is how they can grow it, and get a profit base. And then that profit base should not only be used for fisheries, it should be used for causes that are important to carp anglers. For example, Tim started, and I helped in the beginning with his predator thing, against the otter thing. Tim should never have had to do that. They've done that. That should have been done by Angling Trust, and meant to represent us. Never. I think carp anglers need a strong political voice, and that needs funds. And so that's where the Carp Society should go, looking at the ways of maximising income which have come from fisheries, and then putting that money to areas where they need to be. For example, and I might have an announcement to make in the next few weeks, protecting our carp stocks from the serious danger of disease at the moment. Fishing is getting wiped out. This is the kind of work that the Carp Society should be doing for the future. It should be an organisation for carp anglers.
completely agree, and nobody has problems, you know, donating their time, services, money, whatever, to that type of organisation. The problem comes when you know there's somebody sat, you know, in his luxury pad on a beach in a foreign country just creaming the money off the top. That's when people don't want to give their services.
But on that point, Tim, sorry, Johnny, that's where it went wrong. You know, the administration got so big, yeah, people wouldn't do it for nothing. So they started employing people. Vic Cranfield, great old boy. You know, he did his best, but his hands were tied. So the fact is, you learn in life that people have good intention, but they run out of steam. You know, so it's another reason why the Carp Society needs someone in there who's got the business acumen to be thinking. I use a word that some people think is a dirty word, profit.
Yeah.
Someone's got to run, get in there and run that like a business, which is what I said to him, probably 15, 20 years ago now, to maximise its profit potential, which then can be put into employing top sharp people in the various areas, potential folders and thieves. You need money to really oil the wheels and make things happen.
Completely agree. Completely agree. We'll be going over an hour, so I'm going to round this off with them.
Have we really?
I do want to, an hour and 10 minutes actually, but I do want to round this off with them. It's a question, it's an observation. I know you've got a story about this, but I remember my first ever session on the church late, which was probably 10 years ago now. It was in maybe end of May, June time, something like that. I was kindly invited up.
Was that the one where you sat outside the lodge?
Yes, I was on that side. Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. I was. Mm-hmm. I ended up catching three, I think, and losing probably three. But undergeared for the power of the fish in a small lake, I think, that year. But I remember being deafened by frogs, and I couldn't believe it. It was almost like Chinese water torture. It was a noise like I'd never experienced on any lake anywhere ever. So I know you have a golden waving frog story, what's the story of the frogs?
We talked about my frogs first. That was when Gary and I were on Connie Brook, I must have Alzheimer's today. And we used to hear these enormously loud frogs, although they weren't enormous, they weren't a lot bigger than English frogs. The noise, as you say, you know, and as an aside, when I brought them to the farm in June, they drive me to distraction at night. You know, I couldn't sleep. I stopped fishing the lake in June, you know, because I couldn't sleep. But anyway, I was running around the margins one day looking at what grub was in there, and I found this massive tadpole, you know, that 18 mil body, I do not lie. And I thought, wow, what a food source. And as it's transpired, they spawn later than the English frogs. It's obviously one of the reasons for the Cops and Churches' success. We get two spawnings of tadpole, and these ones are, you know, are massive. I originally thought they was bullfrogs, but listening to something recently, they might be, you know, they're a European frog anyway. You know, I don't know how they got there. And, you know, I mentioned this in Cartwell once, and someone come on, you know, you're not allowed to move those species, you know, you could end up getting in prison, but whatever. So, and they do give you joy, don't they? Yeah, because they're so different. And so we've had them. But I noticed 3 years ago, there was only one croaking as opposed to dozens and dozens, you know. And, you know, where are my frogs going? And then there was no frogs last year.
Wow.
And I went out with my youngest son, and he's, you know, just so into everything. He loves collating information, you know. And I was talking to him about it. I said, I don't understand it. You know, I said, I can't see where the predator is. You know, the more frogs we had, the more snakes we had. You know, they come in. You know, there's almost always enough food to go round. You know, I said, I can't see what's eating them, Joe. He said, when you heard about the golden waving frog and the disease that has gone around the world, I said, no. He said, his story is basically a species of frog was introduced from somewhere to somewhere, and that had a virus, and that virus has gone all around the world, right? And he said, including England and the UK, and it either knocks out the whole population or they appear to be knocked out, but a few do survive and they come back. He said, but it's more likely than not going to be a complete knockout. Okay, so what about the golden frog? He said, well, the golden waving frog is the only frog that communicates by waving its hands, if that's what you want to call the front paddles, yeah?
Yeah.
And they was found, I think, in Peru or somewhere. And yeah, they don't croak, they just stand there waving at each other, and that's how they communicate. Anyway, these scientists have been studying them, and they noticed that this population had this virus, and they was in massive decline. And so David Attenborough, one of his crews, you know, people know, went in and filmed them in the wild. And then there's an organisation called the ARC or something who takes species out of the wild that are going to for sure become extinct. They went in and just managed to grab the last few. But I did hear another story, they didn't get any, it was too late. But I think the story is they managed to grab the last few before they become extinct.
Wow.
Mad story, isn't it?
Yeah.
So anyway, the point of this year we got our fods back. I'm so happy. You know, they're now croaking away, not in their original numbers, but they're definitely on their way back. So, yeah, we've got our frogs back.
That's fantastic. A nice story to end on, a minute. But although they drove me mad to the point of no sleep all night, it's still kind of nice.
You're going to France soon, Jamie. You're going to France soon. Christ, that's a place where you get hammered by frogs. You know, we're not a cabinet. God, the frogs we've got here individually croak. You know, they've never... Yeah, there have never been millions of them. The individual croak, and interestingly enough, each one has got his own voice. There was one that used to live in the outlet pipe of the cops. I could recognise it straight away, and it used to croak from that pipe for 3 years.
Yeah.
So definitely the same frog until I lost them. But you know, those ones at Kavanagh, there was thousands of them. It's just a constant noise. Yeah, yeah, just a constant deafening noise through the night. Yeah, but so you hear frogs a lot more in France than you do here. So yeah, you got that to come, mate. I don't know what Lake Leatherby like, but they've got a load there as well. Anyway, pal, listen, enjoy your fishing, won't you?
Thank you very much, and fantastic to speak to you.
Good luck with scarves. About time you caught a proper carp, James.
I'm going to be trying.
How big is it now?
It's not reached its peak. It peaked at 99 many years ago. I think it's 97, 98, you know, prime times a year.
Ridiculous.
And it's low 90s Ridiculous. The rest of the year. So it's going to be a low 90, but I don't think it's been below 90 for a lot of years. And the other one, the brown fish, is not far behind it. It's a good 80. I think it dropped to 79 a couple of years back. 2015, I saw a capture of it at 79, but that's the lowest I've heard of it in a long time. So they're going to be fish significant enough regardless of the time of year. And it's a lot of money to go there. It's probably my last ever trip there. It'll be my third trip. And it'll be the first time I've ever been in the going peg. There's two pegs, basically. One's you want to be in, the other one you don't. So we're in the good peg. So.
Well, if anyone can put it off as you, mate. You know, that first time he was on the church, you remember I said you're one of the best static anglers I've ever seen. You know, managing to get the most out of it. You called it a peg, I called it a swim. Yeah, I was impressed with you. Yeah. So good luck with that. Well, it'd be great if and when you ever do your next carp cast, we're talking about your caught scarf.
Wow, wouldn't it be amazing? Wow, I'd settle for either of them.
Focus on it, mate. If not if, it's going to be when.
My French PB is considerably smaller than my English PB. In fact, my French PB is smaller than probably my top 10 English fish. So I'd just settle for beating that for a start.
Well, a lot of anglers don't realise that. You know, they just see all the big French fish or whatever country's fish in the paper. You know, they don't understand how many blanks, how many anglers have gone over there. You know, I've always said, where would you go in England? You know, never seen the water before, you know, for a session, and expect to catch, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s or 70s. But they all, you know, they all have that view when they go to France because they see all the big pictures of fish. Yeah, it can be done, you know, generally speaking. I would make the comment they're easier to catch than English fish, not only because they're not precious, well, they are on the commercial ones. They just eat more. Yeah, they've got bigger appetites, you know, and that's probably because of what the diet of cray and mussels. So generally they are bigger pigs, or they are more pigs and more easy to catch. But yeah, number of blanks I've had, Jamie, you know, say, you know, I've come back from France, you know, time after time after a bad trip and blank. And I think a lot of newcomers into angling don't understand that, you know.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, there are specific, you know, I know there are lakes I could go to tomorrow and pretty much guarantee a couple of 50s and you know, break my French PB, but that's not the sort of angling I do as a rule. I will do that at some point. But if I break my French PB, it's probably going to be by about £30, you know.
Yeah, the point is, mate, your mindset is you're not going to trek all that way to France and spend all that money and want to come back with a 50. You know, you want to really seriously do damage to your PB, don't you? I'd be afraid.
Exactly.
We're specimen hunters at the end of the day, you know what I mean? We're not carp anglers, we want to hunt the biggest.
Exactly. Well, the next time I speak to you, I've been to Bled, done a Eurobanks, and France, so we should have some foreign stories to discuss.
Cool. Well, listen, Jamie, take care and safe journeys, mate.
Thank you very much. Speak soon, pal. Thanks to Kevin, as always, full of insightful stuff. I really do enjoy talking to Kev. And he's obviously an absolute lover of the Carpcast. He's right about the comments. So it's the media that we've got here in this podcast. When we talk to people, we go, you get to know somebody on a different level, don't you, when we have a guest. Obviously, Kevin took a particular shine to Scott Lloyd, or Lloyd as he was calling him. And, you know, you really get to hear what somebody's about, which never comes across in magazines or even like YouTube videos and, you know, even like the DVDs that companies produce. Because when you're doing a DVD or you're being filmed, you're kind of playing up to the camera, aren't you? You're aware that you're being filmed, and you know you can't. It's almost scripted. You know what you're going to say. Whereas when we just chat naturally, you know, it's you just get to know the real person, don't you? You can really hear the passion, which doesn't seem to come across in any other form of media that I'm aware of.
Yeah, very. You know, the first time we heard that about the Carpcast was way back on number two with Ali Hamidi.
Yeah,
because everyone sees Ali as you know, the Corda man, Corda this, goo that. And your chat with him, you know, you're talking about your old days where you're DJing in Liverpool and he's taking the song requests off the women trying to pick up some of your crumbs.
Yeah, you know, that's
brilliant.
You just hear people on a different level, don't you? And if you haven't listened to all the early interviews, we do recommend going back. There are some great ones in there. We do get to know people on a different level, and I love talking to Kev. You know, we have normal conversations. We do talk about businessy stuff as well, and the occasional bit of politics. But you know, I know we're saying this because it's our creation, but it's a great way of getting to talk to people. I mean, Kev, as he said in the interview, he loved the last Rob Hughes interview, and obviously the Scott Lloyd one, as he does all the others. I know he's caught up to date with all of them. So yeah, we're glad we have Kev on every month. We're also glad that we work with Carp Talk, the finest and only weekly news magazine, packed full of features, competitions and everything else. It was the Bible of weekly catch reports pre-internet. And it's a day ticket special this week. You can get this magazine. You can get it from every Saturday. You can get it online to download it direct to your device, computer, PC, MacBook, Android, whatever you have. You can do that from pocketmags.com is the website. Also, you can purchase the hard copy on a Tuesday, which this week is going to be out on Tuesday the 28th of June. And it's a day ticket special this week. There's an extra 32 page of day ticket content, and there's a 24 page pullout detailing some of the best day ticket venues to fish up and down the country. I will be buying this week's Carp Talk because, you know, when you just want to go somewhere different with your mates and it's like, oh, where should we go? Oh, I don't really know. To have a 24 page pullout with a choice of some of the top day ticket lakes in the country is invaluable, I think. Grab it and keep it. I don't even think I would download it this week. I'm going to go to the shop and buy it just so I've got that. Because regularly, I'm with my mates, it's like, should we go, you know, go for social next week? Where should we go? Don't know, Oxford's always busy. And all of a sudden, you don't know. So it's 24-page pull-out of day ticket venues. You need to get it. Plus, there's news as well. It might be a day ticket special, but the big news comes from the River Aire in Yorkshire, where the British River record has been smashed. The captor does an interview in there, and another angler who also caught a big fish from the river on the same day. So, if you want to find out what, where, why, you need to get this week's Carp Talk. The parrot's in there as well for its third capture of the year at a very healthy weight, which is the biggest carp in England. It's 50s from Eric's Willows, Elphix, and of course the weekly Welly Whacker from Wellington Country Park. We speak to the owner of a Welsh day ticket water. He's put up a huge reward for information about the 70 plus carp he believes to have been stolen from the fishery. Now, I believe that's 70 individual carp and not a 70 pounder. Because I think we'd have heard about it beforehand. But yeah, he's offering a big reward. He thinks fish are being stolen. So get this week's Carp Talk to find out. Of course, there's the usual features. There's Ian Hurst, Matt Ogan and Adam Kluwer. They visit some of the country's finest day ticket waters. Gary Carlton is in there with a... And he recalls a story of finding a rare jewel of a lake that was unfortunately lost to otter predation. One of our favourite carp anglers in the scene, Julian Cundiff, he does a piece in there. Jake Anderson's in there as well, was sharing a secret tactic, help him up his big carp catch rates. And of course, there's the weekly competition. There's a load of the brand new Nash clothing to give away, and a holiday to the very lovely Cherry Lakes in the Cotswolds. So it sounds like it's not to be missed this week. Saturday the 25th of June, you can download it to your device from pocketmags.com, and it's out in the shops on Tuesday the 28th of June, or go to the Carp Talk online website, and there's a stockist locator as well. You can find out where they can stock it, or just go into your local newsagent and say, order it me please, I would like a weekly Carp Talk. That's it, I'm off fishing finally for the first time in about a month.
And I'm going to go and catch some chub.
All right. And yes, don't forget our competition as well. Two separate packs of pinpoint sharpening gear up for grabs. Mark's going to put a post up very shortly, which you'll have seen by the time you've heard this. Pick the weights of the first carp out of his syndicate. I'm guessing should we give him like a high and a low? The late record is what, 45 something?
Yeah, I think the biggest fish was last out at 43. So,
what's the biggest fish and the smallest fish? That's what we need to know.
Yeah, I'd say between 15 and 45.
Okay, 15 pound and 45 are the potential window. What's Mark's first fish out of the new syndicate going to be? Get entering.
And I will appreciate more optimistic guesses.
I'm going to balk you. I'm going to go for... I'm going to guess here now.
Here we go. You're going to jinx me. And if you... I'll tell you what, if you win, I'll be sticking this sharpening kit where the sun don't.
Yeah, well, I've already got one, so I will give it to the next closest if I win. But £19, 4 ounce.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, at least it's a carp.
Yep, all carp are grateful. Are appreciated. I'd rather have a great big fat one though.
Yeah, no worries. Right, I'm out of here. I've got to get packed and go. Until next week, happy 90 pounders.
Check out the website at thecarpcast.com. There you'll find extra content, merchandise and lots more to support the show, including our entire back catalogue of free offerings.